Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 188. I'm recording it on Monday, December 7th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 20. That's not good. I wouldn't advise going with a high stock allocation at today's valuation levels. The music for this podcast is entitled Chainswinger. The title of the podcast is Bogle's Contradictions. I'm going to start, if I can find it. I should have found it before I started the podcast, but hopefully it won't take long. I'm going to start with a post. I'm going to read a little bit of a post. It's not too long. At the Vanguard Diehards board. Vanguard Diehards was a great board. It was the best investing board on the internet for a number of years. I posted there actively for, I think, 2 years, July 2005 through, I don't know, February. I don't recall if it was February 2007 or February 2008 when I was so rudely kicked off. But there's a post or a thread there that it's actually a little bit sad. I guess I've just had enough. Here it is. The poster's name is Limo Man, I guess. And this thread went up a couple days ago. I think it was December 5th. And I'm going to link to the thread as my Passion of the Day feature at my site. Either today is Monday. I'm going to do it either Tuesday or Wednesday, I expect. But there's actually some sadness in this. And there's something encouraging in it. And there's sadness and encouragement. And I don't know, not insight exactly, but it reveals a truth. If you can hear these words and sort of understand what's being said. I'm sorry. The lead post is by Cuda Man. It's not by, I don't know. That other fellow maybe did the last post. The post was started by Cuda Man. C-U-D-A-M-A-N. He's a longtime poster at Vanguard Diehards. And the history here, to be very brief, is the Vanguard Diehards was a fantastic board for a number of years. There always was an abusive side. There always were these sort of thugs that ran it. But, you know, it's sort of implicit in the title. They call themselves diehards. Means they're very strong in their beliefs. And there's nothing wrong with being strong in your beliefs. I sort of like the name diehards. You know, diehards, somebody that won't give up. I think that's good. Persistence. But when it crosses the line and becomes incivility, blind dogmatism, it sours you, destroys you, really. And I think it would be fair to say that some of the leaders of that board, some of the founders, have destroyed themselves as human beings with their dogmatism. And they ended up destroying that board and then abandoning it and going over and setting up a new board, which they call Bogleheads.org. And the Bogleheads.org is extremely successful in terms of posters. It's the biggest investing board on the internet that I know of. But it's even worse. It's even worse in terms of the dogmatism than Vanguard Diehards, because at Vanguard Diehards, those who would post more reasoned viewpoints would often be attacked. But the board was owned by Morningstar, and Morningstar would allow them to post. Morningstar would not stop the abuse of posters, which I often refer to as the followers of Mel Lindauer. Mel Lindauer was the leader. Mel Lindauer is the author, the co-author of a book entitled The Bogleheads Guide to Investing. And he was the leader of the abusive group. And I think one of the founders of the board. I'm not certain, but I think so. I'm pretty sure that's true. I wasn't there in those days, but I'm pretty sure that's true. And But they would allow Lindauer and those who posted in support of him or in defense of him to be as effusive as they wanted. Morningstar never stepped in the time I was there and reined in any of the abusiveness. I don't think that ever happened once. But they also allowed, as long as if the people being attacked responded in kind, they would be removed. In other words, there was a double standard. The abusive group, the pro-Lindauer group, could be as abusive as all get out, nothing would happen. But if the people who were being attacked were to respond with abusiveness, they would be instantly kicked off the board. But if they did responded without abusiveness, which is what I did, and simply kept, you know, repeating facts or explanations, they would not be removed under the Morningstar days. And the Lindauer group became enraged at this. And eventually they moved to this Bogleheads board. And so at the Bogleheads, there's less abusiveness on the surface because now they don't need to be abusive. If someone posts honestly about the flaws of the buy and hold model, they're just booted. Nobody ever knows about it. Nobody ever hears about it. There's no notice. There's no nothing. So there's less abusiveness on the surface, but there's less freedom of speech because at least at the old board, there were people who would make an effort to sort of knock down this wall of dogmatism. So this fellow Kuda man has a long history, and hold, it's only a few paragraphs. I'm going to read it and then comment on it and then get on to the whole discussion of John Bogle's contradictions. The title of this post is, "I Guess I've Just Had Enough." Dated 12/05/2009. Kuda man says, "I found this forum in late 2005. It then stood for the investing approach of Jack Bogle, espoused by those such as Mel Lindauer, Taylor Larimore, and many others. What a gold mine I found. Wow. In recent years, most left for Bogleheads.org due to issues with moderation here and the attack on Mr. Bogle's investing approach. The attack here has not stopped. I'm a traditionalist and loved this place in those days. I have argued continuously over the years and have until this day to maintain that investing philosophy here. But I grow tired of the battle. I will not post here in the future. For my own health and peace of mind, I say this. This place was once the best. It is no longer. There are still some here who will continue to argue the philosophy. I will not be part of that. I'll only say that I think it is a shame that Morningstar would not respect this place and what it stood for. I won't say I'm right without doubt in my belief in Mr. Bogle's philosophy. I'll only say that it's a shame a forum on Morningstar can't allow that discussion without attack. I dwell in a place here that no longer exists, and so I will no longer, period. Jerry." I like that post. This is a guy. There's a saying I used to have. I've been saying this for I haven't said it so much lately, but I used to say it in the early years of the great safe withdrawal rate debate. I used to say, and this is the days when grainy, I was posting not so much at Vanguard diehards at indexing boards. I was posting at retire early boards. And John Grainy was the leader there of the abusive group. And I want to say, just before I go on, I mentioned Lindauer and I mentioned Grainy, and I do that often because you have to give names, you know. You have to give some good writing involves being particular, adding color. If you don't give any names, it's just too vague. And there was a day when I believed that the entire problem was John Grainy before I had ever met Mel Lindauer. And I used to believe the entire problem was John Grainy. John Grainy has been a bad actor, but I will say in John Grainy's defense and in Mel Lindauer's defense, the problem ain't John Grainy, and the problem is not just John Grainy and Mel Lindauer. Is not. These two exploit a situation. They exploit an unfortunate situation. But it's not just those two. So that, you know, that can be said in defense of them. So I do have to use their names, I feel, because I can't refer to every single abusive poster there ever was. But, and those are the two most prominent. Lindauer's the leader, and, you know, and human beings follow leaders. And so when the leaders betray the community, it's sort of a problem, you know. But it's not just those two. So what was I saying? Oh, so I used to say back in the older, you know, some years back, I used to say that the Grainy group, I call them the Grainy goons, I'd say they live. They want to go back to the summer of 1999. I'd say the summer of 1999 is over. That was one of the catchphrases I used to use. The summer of 1999 is over. And every now and then somebody, you know, they pretend, they play these stupid games, and they'll say, oh, I wonder what he's talking about, like they couldn't figure it out. But, you know, everybody knows the basic idea. The basic idea is stocks, buy and hold. Everybody thought buy and hold was groovy in the summer of 1999. Stocks started doing well in 1975. Most people trace the bull market back to 1982, but I have a podcast, one of the earlier ones, where I look at the record, and the truth is stocks started providing decent, at least decent returns in 1975. 1982, valuations started going up. Valuations did not go up from 75 to 82, but when valuations are stable, and they were pretty much stable for those 7 years, when valuations are stable, investors are getting a return of about 6% real, so that's a nice return. So from 75 all the way through 2000, 25 years, stocks were a great investment class, and buy and hold first became popular with the publication of Burton Malkiel's A Random Walk Down Wall Street, which I think was published in 74. So from the time of the publication of that book all the way through through say January 2000, buy and hold made people millions. That's why it's so popular. You know, I remember a guy, I'm laughing, but maybe I shouldn't laugh, I don't know. But, you know, you have to laugh so you don't cry. But I remember when the Bernie Madoff stuff came out. And I remember I don't know where it was, some discussion board. And there was a guy, and somebody was saying, yeah, this is just out-and-out fraud. He's got doctored, certificates here. The transactions didn't even exist. I mean, you know, if this isn't fraud, what is fraud? And another guy came on and said, that's not fraud. He says, I invested with Madoff, and I made, $2 million. He's like, that's not fraud. In other words, if I made money, it's not fraud. That's the attitude. And this guy, I'm sure the guy was sincere. He's if I made money, how could it be fraud? In other words, there are certain fraudulent schemes that really, you know, it's like a chain letter. People make money in chain letters. People say, oh, it's fraud. It doesn't mean that nobody makes money from it. Sometimes you have to give some early converts money so that they'll spread the word, and you'll get more converts later on that are going to get busted. Now, buy and hold does not involve fake transactions. It's not fraud in the sense that Bernie Madoff is fraud. There's not intent there. You know, there's not. But it is fraud in the sense that it doesn't work. And it's fraud in the sense that the historical data doesn't support it. At one time, people thought it did, but the academic research came out in 1981 showing that it does not. So it's been 28 years since we have quote-unquote known that buy and hold cannot work. But anyway, in the summer of 1999, everybody was jazzed up. Everybody thought this stuff was just groovy. And you know, again, another killer fact, the alternative to buy and hold, I call it rational investing, the alternative model. But the rational investing is a name. It's a name for a model, but it's a model that's in the school called behavioral finance. And it used to kill me. Behavioral finance people used to publish stuff. They've been around for a while, and they used to publish stuff in, you know, the summer of 1999. And they're supposed to be the opposite of buy and hold, at least in my mind, they should be. But the behavioral finance people, they would support it. They'd say, you know, you've got to look at the psychological factors, which of course I agree. And then they'd say, oh, one of the things that's so sad is that people are afraid to invest in stocks because they're afraid of losses. And look how much you would have made if you had followed buy and hold. And I'm like, ah! And it's all true what they're saying. But people didn't make that money because of buy and hold. They made it because stocks were underpriced in 1975, insanely underpriced. Anyway, any strategy of investing in stocks was going to pay off for 20 years, starting in 1975. There was no way you could hold it back. Buy and hold had nothing to do with it. in my opinion. But buy and hold got the credit because buy and hold, you know, was developed at that time and heavily promoted, millions of dollars put into it by the stock selling industry, and it clicked with people for various reasons. I think one of the reasons it clicked is that it doesn't sound like a get rich quick scheme. I think that's one of the reasons it clicked. But it clicked in any event. And so in the summer of 1999, the buy and holders were just so pleased with themselves, they were busting their buttons. And things, you know, and it didn't matter. You know, you could put up a post on a discussion board showing why buy and hold was idiotic, and you know, nobody cared. But you know, 2000 forward, we had the slow leak crash from 2000 through September of 2008. We had a slow leak crash, and then in September of 2008 through March of 2009, we had a real dramatic attention-getting crash, and now we're sort of sitting around waiting for the next crash to come, and there's sort of an ominous feeling in the air, like everybody more or less knows it's coming. We don't know when, but there's sort of an ominous feel. But the point is that, you know, back when I first started posting on this stuff, May of 2002, you know, say 2002, 2003, I would say to people, you know, the summer of 99 is over, people. You know, it's we got to look at the realities. And the summer of 1999 at that point was close enough that people felt it's coming back. It's coming back. Fantasy worlds and Disney girls are coming back. That's a line from a Beach Boys song, I believe. I always thought that line was funny. Fantasy worlds and Disney girls are coming back. They ain't coming back. It's not true. But I can picture Brian Wilson sitting in his, you know, bedroom, just contemplating fantasy worlds and Disney girls, and it's sort of sad, and sort of sweet. But the summer of 1999 is not coming back, friends and neighbors. But I hear that in this post by Kudaman, a desire for fantasy worlds and Disney girls, and so he says, look, he says, and it's, he's being sincere. Let's give the guy a break. The guy is being sincere, and the guy is, he's hurt. I often say, another thing I often say about, you know, passive investing dogmatics, I say they are investors in pain. It's one of the section titles in the book I'm writing, Investors in Pain. They are investors in pain, and we should honor that pain. You know, we should respect it. We should have sympathy. I believe I'm famous for being harsh, not harsh towards people. I hope that I have never been harsh towards people. I hope I have never failed myself in that regard. But on the idea of buy and hold, there's nobody tougher than Rob Bennett. I make it a practice to, you know, be blunt. You know, blunt as a punch in the nose. Friendly. You know, we've been at these valuation levels four times in history, and we've seen an average price drop of 68% real on those four occasions. Every time buy and holds become popular, it's caused an economic crisis, even among people who didn't invest. It's so destructive to the economy. It not only destroys people who follow, it destroys the entire economy. My good friend. Yeah, that's the way I'll say it. Because, and you know, it's not an accident. I say it that way for a reason, because the guy who's following it didn't wake up one morning and say, I want to destroy the U.S. economy today. I think I'll become a buy and hold investor. You know, he didn't want to do that. He's got a get rich quick impulse. You know, I have a, I mean, you know, I joke about it with my boys. I mean, I have a, you know, a chocolate chip cookie consumption impulse, you know. Daddy eats too many chocolate chip cookies. It's just the way it is. Just the way it is. My boy, Robert, I don't know, we were at the beach a week or two ago, Thanksgiving week, with some friends, and I forget what happened. And, you know, we were there with some friends, and they had their kids there, and the daughters were older. They were on their computers. We were in the kitchen, I don't know, just talking, different people. And my boy, Robert, he's seven, he said something about daddy being chubby. I don't remember exactly. He was making a little dig. And, you know, the girl, the teenage girl, I think she wasn't sure, you know, how I was going to react. Because, you know, she doesn't know me that well. And I just said something like, I said, well, I said, yeah, Robert. I said, but, you know, that's the problem there is, you know, your mother, she likes me to eat these broccoli and all these unnecessary calories, you know. I mean, I just, you know, I consume all these unnecessary calories with broccoli and asparagus and that sort of thing. And I just really do it out of love of your mother because, you know, that's that's the problem. So I've got my, you know, and so the thing I compare buy and hold to is, what if doctors, we've all got these weaknesses, okay? We humans, the book is called Investing for Humans. Humans are weak creatures. Buy and hold presumes perfect rationality. It presumes we're a nation of supermen, and we're not. And I always compare it to, you know, at least, yeah, I struggled with chocolate chip cookies all my life. Struggled with chocolate chip cookies. But at least I can turn on the television or the radio and hear a doctor or a nutritionist come on and they'll say, you know what? Y'all need to stop eating so many chocolate chip cookies. You're killing yourself. You know? At least I can hear the right message. The people who have a weakness for get rich quick, you know, they turn on the radio and television. They say, go with that get rich quick impulse. Don't lower your stock. Oh, no. Yeah, stocks are 3 times fair value. Buy more. Just stick with that same old 70% stock allocation. Go to it. That's what scientific research says to do that. God help us. God help us all. It's hard enough to resist the get-rich-quick impulse without having quote-unquote experts going on television telling you it's the thing to do. So these people are in pain. But Cuda Man here, Jerry, he's looking backward and he's sort of... he's looking backward and he's saying, you know, it's like that old song, those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. You know, we'd sing and dance forever and a day. He's saying, hey, you know, he's not talking about the summer of 99. He's talking about late 2005. But he says, I used to get together here with all my buds and we would talk about how great we were, how smart we were, because we knew buy and hold was the only thing that worked and everything else is financial porn. And you know, and now, and we found a gold mine. I mean, wow! And now all my friends are gone. All my friends are gone. And you know, they another song comes to mind. Good Time Charlie's Got the Blues. You know, this guy used to. This is a song from the 70s, I think. Good Time Charlie's Got the Blues. You know, he used to go out drinking and, you know, having a ball with people, but everybody liked him. The fun guy, and everybody went off and sort of grew up and got married and got jobs, and Good Time Charlie's still hanging out at the pool room, and he's sort of sad. That's what I hear in Kudaman's post. He's sad. He's, you know, can't we bring back the summer of 1999? Can't we bring back these days of buy and hold? And no, you can't bring them back. Buy and hold always destroys millions of lives. That's what it's all about. Giving into a get-rich-quick impulse destroys lives. We all know it, just like we know hanging out at the pool room isn't the way to, you know, it's a thing to do when you're 17, maybe, but it ain't the thing to do when you're 25. In other words, you gotta at some point break from it, and maybe you learn to invest with buy and hold or whatever, but, you know, as the data points come in and you see what it does to people, and you see how people behave when they're trying to quote-unquote defend it, at some point, you have to say, maybe this ain't the way. Maybe this ain't the way. So, you know, he says, you know, a lot of people left for Bogleheads because, you know, he says, oh, because of the attacks on Mr. Bogle's investing approach. The attacks have not stopped. And, you know, I mean, it's sad. And he says, for my own health and peace of mind, I say this. In other words, this really drives the guy crazy. And you see this in all the... you see this in the goons. They're hurt. They're hurting. And he says it's a shame that Morningstar will not respect the place and what it stood for. I love the sentence where he says, this is to his credit. He says, I won't say I'm right without doubt in my belief in Mr. Bogle's philosophy. See, that's a hint of non-dogmatism. He's saying, maybe he's been chastened a bit by the stock crash. And he's saying, I've seen a lot of evidence. There's a mountain of evidence that buy and hold can never work. And I'm not going to say that I'm right. But I sure wish I could talk with my buds. I sure wish we could go back to the summer of 1999. Why can't Morningstar let us do that? Why do they have to allow honest posting here? It's very sad. Well, it is sad. And we need to care about Cuda Man and all those who think along those same lines, which, and there are many, millions, I think, if you really counted them all. But we don't help Good Time Charlie by telling him, hey, yeah, you know, you can be 43 years old and hanging out at the pool room. Sure you can. You can wear flip-flops your whole life. You don't have to get a job. No. What's fun at 17 becomes sad at 25 and pathetic at 30 and, you know, depressing at 35 and, you know, you might be dead at 40. There comes a time when we have to grow up. I believe that's what's going on in the United States today. I think Mr. Bogle, as Cuda Man referred to him, Mr. Bogle, did something very, very important. And it won't be forgotten in my mind. I hope it's not forgotten in the minds of a lot of other people, but it won't be forgotten in my mind. He did something very important. He helped us to learn some things about investing we didn't know. He advanced knowledge of investing in very, very significant ways, in my opinion. But he got some things wrong. He took a first draft, and he got some things wrong. As people who are pioneers, as people who go where no man has gone, will do. They will make mistakes. How many of those early Apollo missions blew up? You're going to try to get to the moon. You're going to kill some people. It's the way you stick your neck out. You know, sometimes people will say, oh, to advance, you got to stick your neck out. Well, it's true. But the guy who sticks his neck out often gets it cut off. That's the other side of the story. You know, the safe place to be is hiding back in the bushes. John Bogle stuck his neck out and discovered some wonderful things, but made some mistakes and has caused, you know, great human misery. So we're going to have to come to terms with this. We're all going to have to get together. And the goal, you know, what Cuda Man is really saying is he wants peace. He wants peace. And there were so many opportunities at Vanguard Diehards for peace. I remember, you know, he mentioned Taylor Larimore. Taylor Larimore is the co-author, or the other co-author with Mel Lindauer of the Boglehead's Guide to Investing. There's a thread I remember. I remember at Boglehead's where it appeared to me that Taylor Larimore was trying to achieve peace. You know, we had these wars going on. And there were people who picked up on it. And I was one. I mean, I jumped in and said, great, you know, this is great. And then somebody got in and put in some nasty stuff. And then, what's his name? Great poster, Searchnitz, came on and said, oh, you know, it's just the nature. It's the nature. He told the story. I can't remember the story. The scorpion and the, what was it? The scorpion and the what? Somebody helped him cross the lake. I don't know what it was. Scorpion and the turtle or something like that. And he ended up killing him. The scorpion killed whoever it was, helped him. And you know, he had said to him, well, you know, you can trust me. I won't kill you because if you die, I die. So, you know, you can trust me. I'm not gonna sting you. And the whatever it was, turtle or whatever it was, helped him across the river, whatever it was. And then he stings him and they both drown. And he's like, well, why'd you do that? I bought into your story when you said, and you know, just the nature of a scorpion. That's just what I am. Well, that's the way that's the way the goons are. They just, you know, Taylor Larimore could stick his neck out, which I think he was doing in that thread, and say, hey, let's try to make peace. But the goon just, it's his nature to destroy, and he's going to destroy Taylor Larimore. He's going to destroy John Bogle. He's going to destroy himself. He's going to destroy everybody, because that's just what a goon does. So, the hard part is we've all got this inside us. We've all got this goonishness inside us. Goonishness is sin. We've all got it inside us. And so we've all got that potential. We've got to rein it in. That's called being civilized. That's called, you know, being real, being human, being an adult. And we have to take Bogle's ideas to a new place. So I feel sad. I really felt that was an exceptional post and that it made me feel sad. I think he's wrong, of course. I think he's trying to take the Vanguard Diehards board, you know, well, he's leaving it, so that's fine, but he's essentially advising the board to go back to what it was, you know, to become more dogmatic, which is insane. It needs to go the other way, not back to being more dogmatic. It needs to go the other way. I have said, I mean, Morningstar doesn't really fully allow honest posting. They allow more. They certainly allow more than Bogleheads, but I can't post at Vanguard Diehards. And I know some others can't. And so they don't fully allow. But if they allowed fully honest posting, I think we could build that board to something bigger than the Bogleheads. I do think, here's an interesting angle, that Coup de Man post points out, and I'm not in the business here of defending, quote-unquote, Morningstar or Motley Fool or anybody else, but it does point out how, you know, what a spot they're in. Because anything they do, they get criticized, you know. When they allowed, like I say, from 2005 to whatever it was, 2007, they allowed honest posting, but they also allowed smear campaigns against those who post anonymously. So, you know, sort of a mixed position. Well, they got slammed every which way to Kingdom Come by the Lindauer group for that. But then they banned honest posting, and they still got slammed. And now they're again in some kind of weird limbo. They allow some honest posting, and others they don't, and who knows what. And they sort of go with the weather. You know, if stocks are down and people are PO'd at buy and hold, they allow criticisms. And if stocks are going up, they don't. And they just got whatever is in the wind. And that's how I would describe the site administration policy today. Whatever's in the wind. And but now they get slammed by people who want more dogmatism. But if they allowed more dogmatism, they'd be slammed for that. Now, that does not justify their behavior. The way to play it is decide what rules are going to apply, write them up, post them at the site, and then administer them reasonably. That's what you do. That is, people are going to slam you. People slam me. The goons slam me all the time for my when I take down an abusive post. Well, sorry, it's my job. If you can't accept being slammed, don't set up a discussion board, because you're going to be. But you ought to at least be true to your word. In other words, if you make a promise to people who come to the board and build up your board that you will protect them from abusive posting, then do it. So, you know, Morningstar's not right, but I do think that what Kudeman does, he does illustrate, he does highlight how, you know, how it's hard. Anyone hosting an investing board is hosting a board that inherently is intensely emotional. It's there's several layers to it. It's intensely emotional, but the emotion can't be discussed because buy and holders pretend that investing is a rational exercise. So they pretend that the emotion's not there. Not only is it intensely emotional, but the emotion has to be hidden, which of course gives it more power than if you were open about it. So it's intensely emotional. The emotion is denied. And it comes out in all these strange, ugly ways, you know, with all these personal attacks and smears. And the owner of the site, and it changes. You know, it's you know, when the same people who will say, oh yeah, you know, I don't want to hear any story, and I don't want to hear honest posting about the historical data because that makes me sick to my stomach. I'm a buy and holder. I'm got it all on the line. I'm risking my retirement on a lottery ticket. Don't tell me what the historical data says. And then stocks crash, just as anyone who had followed the academic research knew they were going to. And that same person will be steamed that they lost all their money. They'll take it out on Morningstar. They'll say, oh, why did you let me hear? Why did you let me hear all this stuff? Again, the answer, you're not going to make everybody happy. That can't be done. So the answer is to be true to yourself. The answer is to say, these are the rules. And you have to be a big, you know, have to be a big boy and take care of yourself, or a big girl and take care of yourself. But what our job is to facilitate learning, our job, so we will not allow abusive posting, but we will allow different viewpoints. We will not say Mel Lindauer gets to decide what everybody has to think. That we won't do. but we will allow different viewpoints, but we will not allow abusiveness either for Mel Lindauer or against Mel Lindauer, either way. All right. Now, I really wanted to talk about, I think I'm circling on it, but I probably should get a little more targeted. I really want to talk about Bogle's contradictions. The point here is John Bogle caused all this. Now, he didn't intend to. You know, we're all victims of history, and we're all victims of circumstance. We're all placed in situations. You know, we have to make calls. We have to make decisions as to what to do. And that happened to me. And, you know, sometimes you're in these situations and you can't believe, you know, how did I ever get in this? And, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's a God. I tend to think there's a God, you know, that places him in them. But some people say it's just evolution, just chance. I don't know. I don't believe that. I believe there's a God. But I have to admit that some of these situations we get in, they're... You can't believe. I'm sure that that's how John Bogle feels. I'm not sure, but I believe that's how he feels. So what did John Bogle do? I've wanted to write an article at the site called Bogle's Contradictions for some time. I've just never gotten around to it. But there have been a number of threads, and I think it's important. My goal for my site, I believe that buy and hold is doomed. Buy and hold. We knew that buy and hold couldn't work in 1981 when Robert Shiller published research showing that valuations affect long-term returns. If valuations affect long-term returns, the value proposition of stocks obviously changes with changes in valuations. And if the value proposition changes, the rational investor changes his stock allocation, obviously. Obviously, I don't want to stay the same stock allocation when you know, at some valuations, at super low valuations, stocks provide a long-term return of 15% real per year, and at super high valuations, they provide a long-term return of a negative 1% per year, and you don't want to be at the same stock allocation at positive 15 and at negative 1. There's no stock allocation that works at both of those. You know, 80% doesn't work when the return is a negative 1. And 20% doesn't work when the return is a positive 15. So there is no one allocation that can work for different all valuation levels. So you have to change your valuation. So you can't be buy and hold. It's irrational. It's why the new model is called rational investing. It's just accepting this obvious reality and going from there. There've been a number of threads where people have talked about Bogle's contradictions, because these boards are, you know, Vanguard Diehards is named after a company founded by Bogle, and Bogle Heads is obviously, you know, about Bogle's investing ideas. So Bogle is sort of the, you know, he's the guru of the last bull market. Buffett is a big name, but Buffett is more for the sophisticated investor. Buffett's for the people who want to pick individual stocks. Buffett's smart as can be, but you know, he's for a limited sort of audience, people who are really going to study investing. Bogle's for the typical middle-class investor, the, you know, earning some money, got to put money in a 401k, and they don't want to study this. You know, they want the basics. They want it simple. They want it to work. They want it safe. And that's what Bogle's about. And that was the past bull market. But of course, the trouble is that what works from a marketing standpoint does not work from an investing standpoint. From a marketing standpoint, if you're in the stock selling industry, you want people to buy stocks all the time. Whether it's value proposition or no value proposition, you want to buy in stocks. That's where your money comes from. But if you tell people to buy and hold, stay at the same allocation, when prices go to insanely dangerous levels like they were from 1996 through 2008, people are going to lose all their retirement money, or most of it. They're going to get upset. I'm not telling any secrets here, I don't think. So it doesn't work. So we have to move to what does work. I call the model that does work rational investing. The only difference between buy and hold and rational is that rational accepts this very, very basic reality, the ABCs of stock investing, that valuations affect long-term returns and that you must change your allocation. So what's the problem, Rob? It's very simple. Academic research supports what you're saying. We've known it for 30 years. You're always talking about this controversy. What's all this controversy? Great debate. What debate is there? What is there to talk about? Just do it. Well, the debate is, there's no intellectual debate. Everybody's always known the value. I mean, everybody I know knows that valuations affect long-term returns. The debate is, do we have to invest rationally, Mommy? I don't want to. I like investing emotionally, Mommy. I like buy and hold. My buddies are buy and hold. I like playing pool, Mommy. I don't want to grow up. I want to be Peter Pan, Mommy. And you can't be Peter Pan forever. It just doesn't work. So what the 7 years is about, it's not an intellectual debate. It's a debate about growing up. It's a debate about, are we ever going to allow honest posting? It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. It hurts in the short term. It doesn't hurt in the long term. In the long term, you retire 5 years sooner. I've got a calculator at my website that allows you to check what the historical data says. And it says, if you're open to investing rationally, you can retire 5 years sooner than a buy and hold investor. That's great. That's what everybody wants. If we could tell everybody today how to invest 5 years sooner, the economic crisis comes to an end. People would feel confident about the future. They'd start spending again, and our economy would get off its feet. But all the people that advocated buy and hold aren't going to be happy with that. They want the summer of 1999. They want to go back with their buds. They want to be back in the pool room. Good Time Charlie's got the blues. Kuderman's got the blues. Mel Lindauer's got the blues. So we have to start talking about investing in a different way than we've ever talked about it before. We can't just talk about, my friends at indexuniverse.com say, Rob, if you're going to write any articles for Index Universe, you got to talk about the Sharpe ratio, Rob. You got to have the Sharpe ratio. No. We don't have to talk anymore about the Sharpe ratio. Everybody knows all about the Sharpe ratio, and those who don't know don't care, and they don't need to know. What we need to know is about investor emotion. That's the untapped continent, the unexplored continent of Investo World. We need to talk about why humans, Kuderman is a human, why they don't want to know the realities. Kuderman doesn't want to hear about realities of stock investing. He's saying, would you shut up with your realities of stock investing? I don't want to hear it. Shut up. Tell me I'm right. Tell me my friends are right. Tell me I'm a genius, please. Rob Bennett doesn't do that. Rob Bennett says, it's insane to invest buy and hold. It's stock crash, economic crisis, never works. So that's the debate, okay? That's the debate. Now, you know, I've been through this. Lots of people. Oblivious Investor banned me recently. Mike Piper, good guy. Didn't want to do it. He felt he was losing people to his blog. They're saying, I'm not going to go to your blog. Mike Piper, you're smart. I like your stuff. Good blog entries. But you allow honest posting. I'm buying all. It makes me sad. I want summer of 1999. I don't want to go to your investor blog. Oblivious, the other one, Behavior Gap. I forget the guy's name. I'll think of it. If it doesn't matter. I mean, if I think about it, it would come back to me. But he banned me. You know, he says, "Oh, Rob, I looked at the stuff at your site. It's fantastic. I love it. It's a huge contribution. Valuation informed indexing. You know, very valuable. Oh, by the way, you're banned. Don't come to my blog anymore. Don't comment at my blog." Well, why? Why didn't you make me kind of a huge contribution? You know, when we come, you're looking to start a fight, Rob. You're telling people what the historical data says. You're upsetting my readers. They got sick stomachs. They're going to the doctor. They can't. Going to the doctor? Because I told them what the historical data says? About the effective valuations on long-term returns? I reported accurately the numbers to use in their retirement. Go to the doctor? I'm sorry. If I laugh, it doesn't mean that I'm not sympathetic. It means I laugh so as not to cry. Because people shouldn't have to go to the doctor because you report accurately what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates. Even the goons today. I've been having some discussions over at Goon Central. It's a discussion board owned by John Graney. and even the goons. They don't say anymore that the old school Sanford droid studies get the numbers right. What they're saying, they say now all the time. This has become standard operating procedure. They say, oh, Rob, you can't identify an arithmetical error. Well, of course I can't identify an arithmetical error. There is no arithmetical error. What I say is they get all the numbers wrong. There's an analytical error. They don't count valuations. You know, it's like saying, you know, you see somebody driving drunk. You see they're going to get killed and they're going to kill other people. And so you pull them over and they say, you can't prove I didn't have my seatbelt attached. I had my seatbelt attached. You can't give me a ticket for driving 120 miles an hour. I had my seatbelt attached. That's the law and I did it. Well, yeah, you followed that law, but you didn't follow the law about the being drunk part. So, yeah, you didn't make any arithmetical error, but you made an analytical error. And you caused millions of people to have failed retirements. You know? But the point is, you know, we're in a crazy situation because these people, they know what's wrong. You combine these elements. Knowing something is wrong. Not wanting to fix it. And having the thing be something that affects the entire economy, you know, the financial futures of millions of people. Add those three elements and, man, you've got a nuclear explosion. How are you going to deal with it? Well, I say we've got to all deal with it together. I can't solve the problem by myself. We need influential, responsible people to step forward and sort of get the ball rolling on patching up the damage we've done. My view is, once we learned that buy and hold cannot work, we should have started the transition to a model that can work. Now, it's easy to say that in the year 2009. It wasn't so easy maybe in 1981. 1981, it was just getting off the ground. They said, oh, yeah, Schiller, Biller, you know, he's got some research, but maybe he's wrong. Who knows? We're going to stick with what we like. And then they had a bull market, and they said, hey, see, Schiller doesn't know anything. Buy and hold does sell work. Look at all the money we made. We're smart. Nobody else is smart but us. It's financial porn, but we're smart. And then in 2000, they said, well, maybe we're not so smart, but we're okay. We did good for a long time. We're okay. Then when the crash came, they got some scaredy cats. But they said, well, but now we've ruined millions of lives. We can't admit we were wrong. We can't admit we did that. Ah! Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So, I'm going to look at my notes because, you know, the problem is, what, you know, what is John Bogle all about? What this CUDA man guy is saying, he's saying it's a shame. It's a shame that Morningstar won't allow people to get together and to pretend that buy and hold can work. It's a shame. And he says that these people are attacking us. They point out the historical data. They're attacking us. Well, here's the question. Does Bogle support buy and hold? Well, he does. So there's a sense in which CUDA man's right, that if you report what the historical data says, you're attacking Bogle. That's fair, because Bogle supports buy and hold, and the historical data doesn't support buy and hold. So I guess if you report the historical data, you're attacking Bogle. But you know what? Bogle also supports using the historical data to guide your investing strategies. That's also a Bogle idea. How can you not attack Bogle? If you say buy and hold works, you're supporting Bogle. But if you say rational investing works, you're supporting Bogle. If you say rational investing is wrong and should be banned, you're supporting Bogle. But if you say buy and hold is wrong and should be banned, you're supporting Bogle. Bogle says both things. It's from Bogle that I learned that valuations affect long-term returns, reading Bogle's book. So, you know, will the real John Bogle please stand up? Something that used to go on is that there's a guy, John D. Craig. He was one of the best posters at Vanguard Diehards. He was eventually banned, but he was one of the best. And he used to he used to defend me all the time. He'd say, "Oh, Rob's a great addition," but he would defend me in this strange way because he'd say, you know, people would try to nail him down about Bogle. And he'd say, oh, Bogle's perfect. He said, Bogle's wonderful. And, of course, I was saying no. You know, I mean, I was saying I respect Bogle, and Bogle made great contributions, but I say Bogle's wrong about the idea you don't need to change your allocation. But John D. Craig would say, no. Bogle's just, oh, I don't know. He's, what was the word they would use? He's, they had a word. I can't think what the word was. When Bogle thought everything was going to, you know, go to heck, he would issue these warnings. You know, he'd say, oh, you might want to be a little nervous now. You know, warnings are appropriate. And people would say, well, what does that mean? Are we supposed to lower our stock allocation? And the Lindauer heads were going, no, don't lower your stock allocation. That would not be buy and hold. Don't lower your stock allocation. No. Bogle's against that. And they said, well, why is he warning us then? What's he want us to do? And John D. Craig would say, oh, you know, this is genius. Bogle's telling it exactly right. He's saying, oh, I can't admit the realities. I can't admit that buy and hold doesn't work because if people knew that they have to change their allocations, they would change it in the wrong direction. So I've got to be very clever. I've got to tell people, never change your allocation. But then when it's all going to crash, I've got to warn them because if I don't warn them and it crashes, they'll say, oh, you're not so smart because it crashed and you didn't warn us. So this way I can warn them and I can say, I'm smart, I told you, but I didn't tell you. If it doesn't go down, I can say, oh, I never told you to change your allocation. No, I'm smart, oh, so smart. You know, this is crazy talk. It's crazy talk. And, but John D. Craig, he didn't like you saying that Bogle was wrong. And he was supposed to be my ally. And this is a problem I've run into over and over again. My problem is my enemies hate me, but my allies are worse. That's a problem. That's a problem in tactical warfare. When your enemies are trying to kill you from the front, you know, and your allies are trying to kill you from the back. There was a line there's a Bob Dylan song that I really like called Across the Green Mountain. He wrote it for some Civil War movie. And there's a funny line. I mean, it's funny and sad, but he's talking about the whole song is fantastic. I just love the song, but I can't even recall the line exactly, but it's about, he's describing the commander and he's saying how courageous he was and so forth. And then he says, killed outright he was by his own men. You know, he doesn't tell the whole story, but the point is, you know, his own men hated him more than the enemy hated him. That's sort of the Rob Bennett. You know, I've got the goons hate me, but John D. Craig would turn on me all the time. This happened not once. This happened many times. Because he didn't want to say, John D. Craig didn't want to say, logic drove him to say, Bogle is inconsistent. Bogle talks out of both sides of his mouth. There's no way to make sense of John Bogle. He's saying two opposite things. He's saying buy and hold, and he's also saying look at the historical data. And the historical data says buy and hold never works. Now, Bogle may not be aware of that. It may be he's suffering cognitive dissonance. I think he's sort of kind of aware of it and sort of kind of not, is my personal belief. But you can't make sense out of investing if you're not willing to say John Bogle's advice contradicts itself. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, there was one speech Bogle gave to the Bogleheads. You know, the Bogleheads were in attendance, and it was a great speech, and the whole speech was about, you know, you better lower your stock allocation, stocks are going to crash, you know, but he didn't use the word lower, you know, he never would use those words, but that was the message being sent. And then at the end, he just had this tagline. He said, so in conclusion, you know, stay the course. And all the goons shook their heads. Oh, that's so sage. That's such wonderful advice. Oh, you stay the course. Yes, absolutely. And John D. Craig was saying, what are you talking about? He's telling you to lower your stock allocation. What do you mean? And oh, no, stay the course. And all these, you know, robots shaking their heads. Stay the course. Buy and hold. Stocks and loan. And, you know, John D. Craig's blowing a gasket. But he doesn't seem to get it, that the reason he's blowing a gasket is that Bogle, it doesn't make any sense. But he couldn't say. I mean, John D. Craig, I don't know today. He was banned. I haven't heard from him now. But in those days, he could not say that Bogle was wrong. It could not pass through his lips. And, of course, I respect Bogle. I love Bogle. So I know where he's coming from, but I got to a point where I realized you just can't defend this stuff. It's just, it's inconsistent. And This was one of the ironies of the discussions, because what would happen is the goons would then attack Craig. They would attack John D. Craig, and they'd say, well, you're saying it's a warning. Well, what should we do? Lower our stock allocations? He couldn't say that because it would be to say Bogle was wrong. And I would end up siding with the goons. I'd say the goons are right. You know, I mean, I don't like the fact that the goons are abusive, but John, what they're saying is right. You know, how can you say John Bogle is your hero and not point out that he's inconsistent? I mean, I say both. I say he is my hero, but he's inconsistent. I just say both, clearly. But I acknowledge the inconsistency. I don't paper it over. And you can't paper it over. We have to come to terms with it. And, not just Bogle, of course. Bogle's sort of the emblem of all this. But, thousands of investors, thousands of experts are saying the same thing. Not just Bogle. Bogle's just the one. You know, he's the leader. Like Lindau is the leader of the goons. We have to come to terms with it. Another case, John D. Craig, after he was banned, I mean, you'd think he'd be pretty PO'd at this point. He showed up in a thread with me at indexuniverse.com. And he was defending me. He was saying, all these nutcases at Vanguard Diehards. But then, something came up about me, and he starts digging at me, and he's saying, oh, Rob thinks he's the king of safe withdrawal rates. And I'm like, what is that about? I didn't come forward and pronounce myself king of safe withdrawal rates, but I did report the safe withdrawal rate accurately before anybody else did. It's just an historical fact. I put forward a post May 13th, 2002 at Motley Fool. It's in the post archives. Anybody who cares to can go to the Motley Fool website. It's still there today, last time I looked. And I said, the old school safe withdrawal rates are analytically invalid. Well, does that not make me, a notch above all the people who were saying the old school studies are okay to use in planning your retirement? Doesn't that mean anything? But John D. Craig couldn't say that. I don't know. I can't say exactly why. I sort of know why. And that's what the purpose of this podcast is, to get at that. But it's a strange phenomenon. What's going on is there's a social taboo. The feeling is, if John D. Craig acknowledges that Rob Bennett is, quote, the king of safe withdrawal rates — I never said I was king, but, if you want to use that language — if he acknowledges it, then the whole house of cards crumbles to the ground. In other words, the problem, the reason why the safe withdrawal rate studies have not been corrected for 7 years is, if we correct those studies, buy and hold collapses in a pile. Buy and hold, it's the buy and hold idea. I put that word in quotes. It's not really an idea. It's an emotional impulse. But it's the buy and hold idea that is responsible for the errors, the analytical errors, in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. That's why those studies have not been corrected. So in other words, everybody tells me, I just get this all the time. As I say, I not only get it from enemies, I get it from friends. And that's when it really hurts. They say, Rob, could you be a little more gentle? Could you not be so tough? Could you don't go looking for a fight. I'm like, look, I'm not looking for a fight. All I'm doing is reporting accurately what the historical data says. I refuse to not do that. I can't do my job without doing that. I fully understand that if I report accurately what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates, it's going to cause a nuclear explosion, not because of anything I've done. I've done the right thing in reporting it accurately. It causes a nuclear explosion because there's 1,000 investment advisors that have been telling people for 30 years that buy and hold works, and it doesn't. But that's not a problem I created, and it's not a problem that is solved by ducking the issue. See, that's really the point. There's a social taboo about pointing this out. The feeling is, it's so horrible. It's so horrible that, we can't bear. We can't talk about it. How can we talk about, people that get paid millions of dollars a year making a mistake that caused, just immeasurable human misery? We can't even record it. Failed marriages, failed businesses, failed retirements. Well, I guess it's going to be hard. I sort of get that point, but what's the alternative? We're never going to correct it? You see, what happened is, John Bogle, he changed investing by incorporating this idea that investing would become scientific. That's what he did. This academic research was done, and they made a mistake. They didn't mean to, they just did. It happens. But John Bogle took all that academic research and said, okay, we're going to base our investing advice on that, on the academic research. Well, that was good, I think. I think it was wonderful. Built the foundation for the rational model. But if you're going to start using academic research, if you're going to start making investing advice scientific, then you've got to, it limits what you can say from a marketing standpoint. And once you do that, you become bound to report accurately what the historical data says. You can't just say whatever you feel like because it makes a good marketing pitch. People, you know, have gotten into this get-rich-quick stuff and they want to hear that it's going to work. No, not if you're gonna start saying your advice is scientific. You've got to if new academic research comes out showing that what you said before is wrong, you've got to correct what you said before. There is no other way, in Rob Bennett's opinion. So the debate, you know, where we are today is, you know, can we duck it? In other words, we've gotten to a point where people don't really try to say the safe majority studies are accurate anymore. They get it that they're not accurate. But they want to duck it. They don't want to say they're inaccurate. So they just duck it. They say, well, can we talk about something else? Can we duck it? And what I'm saying is the longer we duck it, the more we stretch out the pain. There's going to be pain any way you look at it. You know, it's going to be lawsuits. I mean, God knows. But I feel we've got to come to terms with it. And the longer it goes on, the more the financial losses pile up. And the more the financial losses pile up, the harder it is to address it. In other words, if we had done this in 1982, it would have been easy. But to do it in 2009 is hard. But to do it in 2011 is going to be worse. Because the law, you know, by 2011, we may have suffered another stock crash. And people are going to be more upset. So I don't think we're doing ourselves any favors. But, you know, we're in the stage today of feeling the shame. And we've got, you know, I've got to figure out my job is to figure out a way to help people with that. And, you know, what I've come up with, I've talked about it before, is this dual strategy of insisting on the right to post honestly for all community members. You know, frankness is good, honesty is good, bluntness is good, accuracy is good. But combining that with a strong belief that we have to act in love, in a spirit of love. So we have to, you know, we have to look into our hearts and say, how would I feel? If I were Good Time Charlie and I had the blues because all my friends had gone off and gotten married and gotten jobs and you know, I was this loser in a pool hall, still believed in buy and hold 28 years after it was discredited by the academic research. See how I use the word loser? It's harsh, right? It's hard. So I'm not encouraging you to believe in buy and hold, am I? I'm sending all kinds of signals that say, no, buy and hold is for losers. It is. Buy and hold is for losers. Buy and hold hurts humans and other living things. There is no pixie dust. You can sprinkle in the air and then, you know, buy and hold is going to work. It's never going to work. Never has worked. It's never going to work. So, yes, tough. I'm always tough. Always tough. I want to be known as the most severe critic of buy and hold alive on planet Earth today. That's my goal. That's my ambition. But I also want to be known as, you know, what PD person called me, that puppy dog poster. When it comes to dealing with that, I don't believe that we should be, to me, the one extreme is to pretend buy and hold can work. That's extreme. But the other extreme is to condemn people who advocated it, who maybe were doing a lot of good things. And buy and hold, you know, Bogle is the example, had a lot of good ideas. You know, because they stuck their neck out, now let's, you know, hang them on a cross because they made a mistake. That's, to me, the other extreme. What I'm looking for is to try to help us make the transition from the failed model, buy and hold is a failed model, academic research has shown that for 28 years, to the model of the future, which I call rational investing, and if somebody wants to give it a different name, that's fine. It's a name I came up with. You could call it probability investing. You know. But the point is, it's a model where the whole point is to help people not eat chocolate chip cookies. The point is to tell people, you must time the market. You must change your allocation when stocks go to insanely dangerous levels. Not, it's okay not to. Not this gibberish. So we need to be tough on the objective facts. We need to be soft on the human motivations, because, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. Who of us can say that we never allowed the emotional considerations in investing influence us? So we need to move in that direction. So I didn't go through a lot of specifics in this podcast about contradictions of Bogle, but, you know, I mean, you can go through them. Bogle timed the market. That's one example. You know, I know there's a thread, and I'll put it up. Sometime I'll get that article written, and you'll be able to look at the site. And, you know, Bogle, he was interviewed, and he said, oh, yeah, I lowered my stock allocation in 2000. How convenient. How convenient. Yeah, so Bogle timed the market. He says, I don't know anybody. He, you know, he has this famous slogan. He says, not only do I not know anybody who timed the market, I don't know anybody who knows anybody who timed the market. You know, he makes this big BS presentation. But he timed the market successfully. He says, I don't know anybody that's ever done it successfully. He knows himself, doesn't he? He knows the man in the mirror. John Bogle timed the market. That's one of his many contradictions. He talks about reversion to the mean all the time. He says it's an iron law of investing. Well, if reversion to the mean is an iron law, how the heck can you tell people to stick with the same stock allocation? Reversion to the mean means stocks return to fair value. Stocks were three times fair value in January 2000. So if there's reversion to the mean, if it's an iron law and stocks are going to fall to fair value, that means they're going to fall two-thirds. People aren't supposed to. What are they going to do? Go with 70% allocation in those sorts of circumstances? Bogle in a speech, and you can, you know, I wrote about this at the blog. If you enter John Bogle, you'll find it, I think, at the Rich Life blog. Bogle said in a recent interview that valuation-informed indexing can work. Well, then why is it banned? Why is discussion of it banned at bogleheads.org? You know, why does he lend his name in support of that enterprise? Not that it's not a great discussion board, it is. But why not step in and say, you know, let's open this up to honest posting? Why not learn from the great community members? Many community members at Bogleheads and at Vanguard Diehards have talked about how they follow valuation-informed strategies. Well, why not learn from them and share what they're saying with others? So many contradictions, all of them come to the same thing. They all have to do with this question of whether valuations affect long-term returns. That's the great flaw. And many people would say, well, why harp on the mistake, Rob? Why not just point out all the good Bogle's done? He's done a lot of good. So many Bogle ideas are wonderful. The idea of, you know, indexing is wonderful. The idea of being primarily in stocks for the middle-class investor is wonderful. The idea of tuning out the short-term noise is wonderful. The idea of keeping expenses low is wonderful. The idea of focusing on the long-term is wonderful, sticking to a long-term plan. But the idea of not changing your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous level is so bad that it, you know, counters all that good. So that one's got to be changed. That one's got to be changed. And it just seems to me, that, you know, Kuda Man, this is really the point of the whole podcast, Kuda Man and Rob Bennett should be friends. You know, I'm trying to help Kuda Man. I'm trying to help him. And I love the guy he loves, you know, John Bogle. And why can't we all be friends? What is the problem? You know, I think we need to talk about this stuff on a very human level. I want to be friends with Mel Lindauer. I want to be friends with John Graney. I want to be friends with all the goons. Why can't we all be friends? You know, let's get this down to the very human level. You ever had a friend that was doing something very wrong? You know, he's cheating on his wife? Are you a friend if you say, ha, 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 ha? You know, guy's an alcoholic. He's going to lose his job. Ha, 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 ha. Hey, good going, buddy. Good going, buddy. I'm your pal. Or are you a friend if you take him aside and say, look, man, you're making a fool of yourself. You know, you're not getting your work done. You're missing deadlines. You're You're not thinking clearly. You're going to get yourself killed. You're driving recklessly. You're, you know, destroying your family, destroying everything you built. That's a friend. And John Bogle's reputation, in my opinion, is being dragged through the muck at this Bogleheads board. Because all these people are going to be angry when they lose all their money. And when you're dealing with money, you got to shoot straight. I mean, there's just no other way. I am amazed. You know, I say, if you told me on the morning of May 13th, 2002, that anything like this could have ever happened and gone on for so long, I would have said you were just bonkers. I would have just said, no, nothing like this has ever happened in the history of the world. Maybe it's happened and I just wasn't there. You know, maybe there are people in other fields that have seen stuff like this. But, I can't. I'll never get over it. I'll never get over it for the rest of my life. But I'd like to see it end well. And I think the way it ends well is, you know, Rob Bennett appears at one of these Boglehead annual meetings and he walks across the room and shakes John Bogle's hand. It says, hey, man, great work. Let's work together. Let's get the word out on what really works. Let's build on your foundation. You're the godfather of rational investing. Let's, you know, take it to the limit one more time. That's my take. Bogle's advice is contradictory. We can't go back to the summer of 1999, Kudeman. Those were the days, my friend, but those days are over now, and we have to go forward. And moving forward, we can all invest more effectively. We can all retire many years sooner, and we can all live in peace. Rationals and passives. You know, if you believe in passive, well, go, you know, continue. If you believe in buy and hold, you know, believe in what you believe in. If you believe in it, you should say you believe in it for, you know, to the extent you do. To the extent you have doubts, you should acknowledge those doubts. But to the extent you believe, and I think a lot of people are in the middle ground today. In other words, the buy and holders are so defensive, you can't say they really believe. They don't really believe anymore. But they don't believe what I believe. You know, I've studied the data now for 7 years, so I'm pretty darn confident of valuation-informed indexing. They're not. I mean, they're sincere about that part. They have their doubts, and that's good and healthy because their doubts challenge the people who believe in valuation-informed indexing, and that's how we stay honest. So we need their doubts, but we don't need their dogmatism. That needs to go. That stuff is subhuman. That stuff is degrading, and that stuff hurts us all. Most of all, you know, it hurts us all, but it hurts the goons. It hurts their souls. It hurts all of us. So I guess the way I'd say it is John Bogle has one more mission to fly. You know, he has one more trip. And his big trip is going to be, I hope, managing the transition to the new model, to the rational model. And there's no one better positioned to lead us than our friend and hero, John Bogle, the man of many contradictions. Good luck with your investing strategy.